Okay, we are picking up on page 552 in the article Sidurim, 553. It's Perek Beis Mishnah Zayin. So chapter 2, number 7, Mishnah Zayin. And this continues the various statements that were made by Hillel, which we've been seeing over the past two Mishnayos. And this particular statement, which is made by Hillel HaZaken, comes with a little bit of a story, and it's a memorable story. So the Mishnah goes as follows. Af hu ra gulgolas achas should suffer al pnei amoyim. Additionally to what we had read before, Hillel saw a skull floating on top of the water. Amar lo, so Hillel turned to the skull and he said to it, Al da teft at fuch, because you drowned others, they drowned you. V'sof mitafayich yitufun, and in the end, those who drowned you are also going to be drowned. In other words, to summarize in English, what goes around comes around. Right? In other words, you were an aggressor. You killed people. You drowned them. So midah keneged midah. You know, the attribute of divine justice is commensurate with what the person himself did, and that's what's happening over here as well. This Mishnah in Pirkei Avos also appears in the Gemara in the last perek of Sukkah. And again, as one can imagine, the image is a very, very striking image. The image of Hillel HaZaken walking by the water, seeing a skull, and turning around and speaking to the skull and saying to the skull, you know, you're guilty of having murdered people. That's how you ended up in this situation. But, you know, those who hurt you are going to be hurt as well. I think the major comment on this short but very memorable Mishnah is really summarized very nicely in a very long commentary here by the Tosfos Yom Tov. I don't think we've quoted the Tosfos Yom Tov before, so it's worthwhile. Even if we have quoted the Tosfos Yom Tov before, it's worthwhile sharing a little bit about his life. Rav Yom Tov Lippmann Heller lived in the 1600s in Prague, and he was very inspired by a position which was taken strongly by the Maharal of Prague, again, the famous Maharal. The Maharal decried the fact that even back then, in the 15, 1600s, the style of learning was such that kids would start learning Chumash, and very, very quickly they would jump from Chumash to learning Gemara, and the Mishnayos really got neglected. And the Maharal said, we're going to read later on in Pirkei Avos, in the fifth perek, how the ideal approach to Torah learning is to first just go through all of Tanakh, and then go through all of the Mishnayos, and even if that takes you a little bit longer, but then when the kid is 15 and he's gone through all of Tanakh and all of Mishnayos, and he has all of that knowledge at his disposal, so then at the age of 15 the kid is ready to begin Gemara. Otherwise the kid's going to start learning Gemara at a younger age without learning Mishnayos, without really knowing Tanakh. So the Gemara is going to quote a pasuk. He's not going to know what the pasuk is about. The Gemara is going to quote a Mishnah. He's not going to know what the Mishnah is about. And you end up, you know, building the upper stories without putting down the foundation. So, you know, the Maharal was an advocate of what in education they call today back to basics. You know, you should go back and learn the fundamentals. And if people knew their Tanakh better, if people knew their Mishnayos better, so then people would be able to learn on a higher level as well. The Maharal stressed this very, very much. And the Tosfos Yom Tov, Rabbi Yom Tov Lippmann Heller, took this very, very much to heart. So he was instrumental in starting Shiurim for Balabatim in Prague that would learn Mishnayos. That was the focus, the Chevre Mishnayos, the whole concept of the Chevre Mishnayos probably goes back to the Tosfos Yom Tov. So these people would learn Mishnayos together, and one of the Shiurim was given by the Tosfos Yom Tov. And what he would do when he would teach the Mishnayos was that he would bring in a lot of the comments that the Gemara makes and elaborate in such a way so that the Mishnayos Shiur actually ended up being a much deeper, almost like a Gemara Shiur, that he was giving to the Balabatim. Ultimately, he put together the Shiurim and he printed it as a running commentary on the Mishnayos. And that's what we have today on the Mishnayos, the commentary which is referred to as the Tosfos Yom Tov. Yom Tov because his name was Yom Tov, Rabbi Yom Tov Lippmann Heller. And Tosfos, because much the same way that on a page of Gemara, Tosfos goes into the issues in greater depth, so the Tosfos Yom Tov would go into these issues in greater depth as well. One other thing that Tosfos Yom Tov was very famous for is that during the Chmelnytsky massacres in 1648-1649, the Tosfos Yom Tov said that he thought a major reason for the destruction of so many shuls during the Chmelnytsky massacres was the fact that people were not careful about talking in shul, or to put it differently, they were careful. They were careful to talk in shul. They were very, very careful about that. Very devoted, you know, to the concept of talking in shul. So the Tosfos Yom Tov composed a Mishaberach for all those who refrained from talking in shul that they should be blessed. And again, many shuls, including our own, you know, to this day, recite that Mishaberach to try to encourage people, you know, to stop talking in shul. I remember when we first started doing it over here, somebody came up to me and said, you know, it's very nice that you make a Mishaberach for the people who don't talk in shul, but wouldn't it be nice to also make a Mishaberach for the people who talk in shul? Why, you know, why should we be so mean and nasty to only single out one group of people who get a Mishaberach and not the other group of people who should get a Mishaberach? I'm not sure whether the person was being serious or not. I think he might have been serious, but we'll leave it at that. In any case, so the Tosfos Yom Tov on this Mishnah, again, Perek Beis Mishnah Zayin, raises the following very, very fundamental question. And he takes about a page or so to try to answer this fundamental question. Says the Tosfos Yom Tov, you know, it's very nice for Hillel to say that, okay, this guy whose skull is floating on the water was a murderer, and that's why he was killed, and that those who killed him by drowning are going to be drowned themselves. That's very beautiful. That's very nice. It also doesn't always reflect the reality in life. Maisim b'chol yom kama ratzchanim smechim shemesim al mitosam b'dei shamayim. Not every murderer gets bumped off by the mob or the like. There are plenty of people who are murderers, and they die on their beds, right? You know, it's very nice to say what goes around comes around, and it's very nice to point to a skull and to make that statement, but is the statement reflective of the reality? The biggest kasha on this Mishnah comes from the world. You know, it doesn't always seem to be so nice and neat that that events always work out the way that Hillel HaZaken describes them as working out. So what on earth can one, how does that one answer that question? You know, it sounds very, it's such a basic question, one that fits the category of tzaddik viralo. How is it that tzaddikim sometimes seem to suffer and rishayim conversely seem to do well in this world? How on earth can one answer that question and put that back in to what Hillel was talking about? So essentially, the Tosfos Yom Tov provides three answers. So we'll talk, two of them he quotes from other sources, one he gives himself, and we'll try to analyze each of these three answers and put them back into the Mishnah itself. One of the earliest answers to this question seems to come from Rashi. Both Rashi and his comments on this Mishnah, Rashi and his comments on Masechta Sukkah, and many of the later Mefarshim who follow Rashi pick up on Rashi's interpretation of this Mishnah, most notably the Machzor Vitri, one of the Sidurim that was composed by Rav Simcha of Vitri, an early Talmud of Rashi. They all pick up on the following way of understanding this Mishnah, and that's as follows. It says Rashi, Hillel recognized the head. It wasn't just like a random skull that was floating on the water, but he recognized who it belonged to. Parenthetically, I think you have to say according to this, without being overly gruesome, I think you have to say according to this interpretation of Rashi that it wasn't a skull, but rather a severed head that he saw floating on the water. Again, the term gulgoles could fit that description as well. Again, you know, it's hard to imagine that Hillel recognized a skull as belonging to a particular person. That would really be impressive. Probably it means that he saw a head that had been severed, and he saw it floating down the water, and he recognized the guy. And Hillel said, I happen to know that this person was a murderer, so, you know, we see that he got his comeuppance. We see that he was punished for the actions that he did. Now that to some degree, takes off the question of the Tosfos Yom Tov. It doesn't always work out that that the evildoers are punished in that kind of way. In this particular case, according to Rashi, we recognize the guy. We know who he is. We know that he was punished for his act of murder. But on the other hand, then that raises a different question. Okay, so in this particular case, you know, Hillel says that the person was punished in accordance with his actions. But so what? In other words, that's not now a general principle that we can apply across the board. In one particular case, Hillel noticed that a murderer's head was floating on the water. He said, "Oh, you got what you deserved." Okay, and what about all the other cases where people don't get what they deserved? The kasha still seems to be a kasha, but that's at least Rashi's way of dealing with the question. You know, we know that this particular person was somebody whom Hillel recognized, and that's why he responded in the way in which he did. A second answer is quoted by the Tosfos Yom Tov from the Sefer Medrash Shmuel, which is an early commentary on Pirkei Avos. And he gives a fascinating, fascinating answer and a totally different explanation to this Mishnah. Says the Medrash Shmuel as follows. The idea that Hillel was speaking about here in this Mishnah is the notion of Gilgul Neshamos, of the reincarnation of souls. And the message that he was saying to the skull was the following. At some point, whether in this life or in a previous life, you were a murderer, you drowned people, so that's why you were punished by drowning. And because you were punished by drowning, those who drowned you, whether in this life or in the next life or in some next life, are going to be punished by drowning themselves. One of the advantages of the concept of Gilgul Neshamos, of the notion of the reincarnation of souls, is that you can never really ask the question of Tzadik V'Ra'lo. Because the answer to the question of Tzadik V'Ra'lo, how is it that the righteous people are suffering and the wicked people, you know, seem to be doing well? The answer always is, well, just wait till the next Gilgul, or to the Gilgul after that, or to the Gilgul after that. It's all going to play itself out eventually. You just have to wait long enough for the next Gilgul to come out, to come about, right? So that's the answer that the Medrash Shmuel says, and in fact, that says the Medrash Shmuel. That's why the term which is used for skull here in the Mishnah is Gulgolus, right? The word Gulgolus, which again literally means skull, legalgel just means to roll something. So a skull is round, and that's why it's called a Gulgolus. But the term Gulgolus is also evocative of the word Gilgul, right? It's the same word as Gilgul. So in other words, he saw a Gulgolus, Shafa al Pnei Amoyim. He saw this skull floating on the water. Really, says the Medrash Shmuel, what the Mishnah was hinting at is this idea that he saw a Gilgul. He saw that the head was the reincarnation of somebody who had been a murderer in a previous life. And the idea that Hillel was trying to impart to anyone who was, you know, listening to him at this time was, don't despair of divine judgment. Ultimately, this concept of Gilgulim is going to be the answer to everything. And, you know, that's the idea that he's saying with regard to this skull. Yeah.
But that's what you're saying. Let's say the person in this life, you know, was a tzaddik or whatever, but he's been punished because of something he did, you know,
right,
before he died.
Right.
And another.
But that is the whole idea of Gilgulim. In other words, and that answers the idea of tzaddik V'Ra'lo. Why is this tzaddik suffering? Answer, because in a previous life he wasn't such a big tzaddik, so he has to come back into this world in order to atone for the sins that the person did in a previous lifetime. Right? We should point out, the question of whether Gilgulim is part of Jewish thought or not was debated throughout the generations. One Gadol B'Yisrael, who definitely very, very clearly said that he did not hold of Gilgulim, was Rav Sadia Gaon and his Emunos V'Deyos. where he dismisses the idea as not making any sense whatsoever. Many, many other Mefarshim very much clung to the idea. For instance, the Ramban, both in his commentary on Chumash and his commentary on Sefer Iyov, champions something that seems to be about the idea of Gugulim, and others talk about Gugulim as well. I think they have a tradition by the Chassidim. The Chassidim are very into the idea of Gugulim, as all the Mekubalim are, that because Rav Sadia Gaon questioned the idea of Gilgulim, he came back in a later Gilgul as the Baal Shem Tov. That's, I think they say from the Chassidim like that. Okay, so Al Kopanim, you know, obviously if one doesn't hold of Gilgulim, that's not going to be a way of explaining this Mishnah. But for the many, many, many Gedolei Yisrael who held of Gilgulim, who held that that was the way of explaining Tzadik V'Ra'lo, that's the Medrash Shmuel says, that's really what's going on in this Mishnah. Hillel is teaching Klal Yisrael the idea of Gilgulim. Says the Tosfos Yom Tov, I don't like that, and not because I don't believe in the idea of Gilgulim, but I'm bothered by that explanation for another reason over here. Writes the Tosfos Yom Tov, V'lo yitochen be'enai klal, saying that this Mishnah is talking about Gilgulim does not make sense to me at all. Why? Shehu midvarim hane'elomim, because the whole idea of Gilgulim is one of the hidden parts of Judaism. V'roi lahastiram, and you shouldn't just go around talking about the idea of Gilgulim to anyone. Ki'im l'sridim asher Hashem kore. Only select individuals should be privileged to learn that there is such a thing as Gilgulim. V'lo hoyo Rabbeinu HaKadosh mechaber ha-maimer hazeh u'shno b'mishnasa. It doesn't make sense that Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi would take such an esoteric idea that only a few individuals have the right to even learn about, and it doesn't make sense that Rabbeinu HaKadosh would stick it right in the middle of Pirkei Avos, which is something that everybody is learning. And then he adds another thing. Kmo she'en ha-mikro yotze midei pshuto, just as we have a concept that in the end of the day, even though a pasuk can be interpreted in many, many ways, the pasuk never departs ultimately from its simple interpretation. Kach ein ha-mishnah yotze midei mashmo ha-muvan lakol. The same is true with the Mishnah. A Mishnah has to make sense on the most basic of levels. If the only way to interpret this Mishnah is to assume some kind of very, very deep, Kabbalistic, esoteric idea, and that's the only way to make sense out of the Mishnah, says the Tosfos Yom Tov, by definition, Rabbeinu HaKadosh, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, would never have written a Mishnah in such a fashion. Right? So that's the Tosfos Yom Tov says. It's not that I disbelieve the idea of Gilgulim. The opposite is true. I hold that the idea of Gilgulim is a very, very deep and Kabbalistic idea, but it's precisely because it's such a deep and esoteric idea that it doesn't belong in a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, which is, you know, something that the average person is going to read. Such esoteric ideas have to be taught in a much more almost a secretive, you know, an esoteric kind of context. Okay, so those are two explanations, neither of which the Tosfos Yom Tov likes particularly. So how do you explain what's going on over here in this Mishnah? So I'll read you a little bit from what the Tosfos Yom Tov says. I will tell you what I think he's saying. And again, I just want to preface it by saying that it's what I think he's saying, and perhaps he's actually saying something else. But I'll tell you what I think to the best of my ability. So he writes, Shira ha-gugoles hazos, when Hillel saw this skull, Armarli al-da-teft, he said what he said, you know, you were killed because you were drowned because you drowned others. Kolomar, that is to say, mistoma hadas nosein vasecho mechayev dal-da-teft adfuch. As opposed to Rashi, who says that he recognized the actual person's head, so Tosfos Yom Tov says, no, he didn't recognize the person. It might have been a skull, it might not have been a severed head, he might not have recognized it at all. But he says it makes sense, it's logical, that you should have died because of what you did to other people. Because what a person does to others is what he gets back to himself. V'chein ha-seichel mechayev. Because indeed, that's what logic dictates should be the way the world works. Ay, elosh im kol zeh ha-matzius makhisho. Ay, but we see that reality oftentimes does not align with what we think should be the case. Shaharei harbe neherogim v'lo hargu. Because there are many who are killed and did not kill others. V'harbe hargim v'lo neherogim. And many people kill others and they are not killed. So uchdei lahaskim hamitzius shelo yimakchish l'mashem achayvo aseichel. In order to align what we see with our own eyes as being the reality such that it shouldn't be contradicted by what logic dictates. V'hu shal koponim akol b'mida emes u'shvitas tzedek nishpat, the notion that the world is judged in a just fashion. L'fikach hu aya omer, so therefore Hillel used to say this statement. V'harva margulo b'fume min oz v'hala, and he would repeat it often, often, often afterwards. Lahargil b'fia brios, in order to get people used to the idea, kimischayiv hakol b'chiyuv amiti v'midas yosher, that logic and justice dictates that the following should be true, namely that people who are wicked are judged for their wicked actions. Hare kimidos hanahugos v'olom yisharos u'tmimos heim. Because after all, the way God runs the world is in a just fashion. From those things which we clearly see, we extrapolate to those things which are hidden, which we don't understand. That those things as well are just and righteous. It's just simply that we don't have the ability to understand them properly and to make sense out of them. So the nimsa, it emerges, shezeh maimer al dateft, that which Hillel said to the skull, lo amru b'derech chiyuv l'chayiv shekach hu v'sheken yihyeh. He wasn't saying in the sense that it has to be this way, that it will always be this way. Ele b'derech hanocha hoya omer. He said it as a kind of assumption. Shekachi hanocha kefi aseichel. This is what logic dictates. Umipnei shahamafurs v'makhisho. Since we see that oftentimes reality doesn't line up with it, Hillel wanted to emphasize that kadesh lo yavo ha'adam chas v'shalom lomar v'les din v'les dayan. A person shouldn't, God forbid, come to say that the world is run without a judge and without proper justice. So therefore Hillel used to emphasize this idea time and time again because of the fact that there are so many things in reality that don't line up with this statement. I read a lot of the words, I usually don't read so much, I'm sorry, but I read a lot of the words just to convey that I think the Tosfos Yom Tov, as much as he's trying to answer the question, at least for me, is a little bit hard to understand. What he seems to be saying is, you're right, you know, reality oftentimes doesn't line up with this notion that the good people are rewarded and that the bad people are punished, you're right, but Hillel wanted to impress upon people that that's the logical and the natural way of understanding the world. Yeah, but if it's logical and natural, but it's not reality, so what's really the answer to the question? What exactly was Hillel's response? You know, when people would come to Hillel and say, life isn't fair, and he would say, what do you mean? You know, this guy, you know, drowned people, and that's why his skull is floating on top of the water. And the people would say, how do you know that? And Hillel would say, well, I assume that's the case. So how does that really answer the question, right? You assume that's the case. Okay, but as long as there's, you know, not a universal concept that, you know, the bad people are always punished and the good people are always rewarded, don't you keep running into the same question over and over again? At least Rashi can tell you, I know the guy, you know, whose head is floating on top of the water. Right? Hillel can't even say that. Hillel is saying, I assume that the guy was probably a Rasha. Okay, so if I was a skeptic, I'd go back and say, how can you assume that? You know, how can you imagine that? We see that that's oftentimes not the case. So I'll tell you what I think the Tosfos Yom Tov is saying. I saw actually, I was looking briefly in the art scroll. So the art scroll has, you know, these four line notes at the bottom of the page. And although the art scroll doesn't quote the Tosfos Yom Tov, it says something very, very similar to this, which I imagine is drawn from the Tosfos Yom Tov, and I think this is what the Tosfos Yom Tov is trying to say. It is undeniably true that there are people in the world who are tzaddikim and they suffer, and there are people in the world who are rishaim, who are wicked people, and they seem to be having a good life. Undeniably true. The question is, do you look at the world in such a way that those are the rules or those are the exceptions? How do you look at the world? And that, to some extent, is really a subjective call. It's kind of like the question of whether the person looks at the glass as being half full or half empty. If a person were to come to you and say, the world is not fair, tzaddikim suffer, rishoyim prosper, or as I once heard somebody say, it's only the tzaddikim who die young, right? That's the way it always is. So the truth is, you have the right to be skeptical of that and to stay back. You know, do you have hard and fast figures on that? Have you done a survey? Do you know for a fact that it's davka tzaddikim who are suffering in this world and davka rishoyim who are prospering in this world? You know, is it your contention that justice is never done? Is that what you're trying to say? The truth is, you'd have a very, very hard time proving that to be the case as well. I'm not even sure how you'd go about, mathematically, you know, proving such a thing. I mean, you'd have to line up a representative sample of tzaddikim, rishayim, you'd have to know everything about them. I mean, there's no way that a human being could possibly do this. The idea, says the Tosfos Yom Tov, that Hillel was trying to instill in people's consciousness is the following. The world is basically fair. Tzaddikim basically come out on top, and rishayim basically suffer. It doesn't always work out that way, as again, anyone who's lived any amount of time anywhere could tell you. It doesn't always come out that way. You're right, there are exceptions. We don't have the capacity to explain those exceptions. That's why there's a Ribbono Shel Olam. He can explain why there are exceptions to the rule. But the way you have to look at the world is that those are exceptions to the rule. You know, fundamentally speaking, the world is a just place. Fundamentally speaking, when people do what's right, they're rewarded in this world. And fundamentally speaking, when people do what's wrong, they are punished in this world. This is even leaving aside any discussion of Olam Haba, right? Where we have absolute faith that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to even the playing field in Olam Haba, you know, in accordance with what we've done in this world. But in Olam Hazeh, you know, the way things typically work is that there is justice in this world. That's, I think, the Tosfos Yom Tov is saying. When Hillel turns to the skull and he says, look, I don't know you. I don't know you from Adam. We've never met before, right? But I would assume, right, the language of the Tosfos Yom Tov is, I make a hanocha, I make an assumption that if your severed head is floating on the water, you know, obviously you're a victim of violence, you probably deserved that violence, right? It's possible you didn't deserve that violence. Okay, I'm not saying that it necessarily happens to be the case. You know, certainly there are people who are victims of violence who do not deserve it. That's certainly the case. But I'm going to make an assumption, because the way the world usually works is that the world is fair, right? And I'm going to make an assumption as well that those people who did violence to you themselves are going to meet up with violence, because the world is fair and that's the way things work. Sometimes there are exceptions to the rule. Maybe even many times there are exceptions to the rule. Okay, rules have exceptions, right? The rules were made to be broken, right? The Ribbono Shel Olam knows why the rules are broken in one particular case. But there's a fundamental difference between looking at the world as being chaotic and lacking justice. And again, as the Tosfos Yom Tov says, less din v'less dayan, there's no judge and there's no judgment. That's not the way we look at the world. Fundamentally, we think there is justice in the world. We can't explain everything. Okay, so there are questions that we have that we can't explain. But that doesn't take away from a fundamental way of looking at the world, that the world is just. I think that's what he's trying to say here in this Mishnah. If that's correct, that I think can help us understand a statement that the Rambam makes in his commentary on this Mishnah, which becomes that much more striking when viewed against the backdrop of the Tosfos Yom Tov. The Tosfos Yom Tov read this Mishnah and he was bothered right off the bat. How can you say such a thing? How can you say that, you know, what goes around comes around? We see that the world doesn't seem to function that way, right? And the Tosfos Yom Tov labored to try to answer that question. You would think that everybody would be bothered by that question. You would think that's not a question that you had to go through all of Mishnayos and all of Tanakh before you got to that question. That's a question that just comes from the reality. So, in light of that, the comments of the Rambam over here are particularly striking. The Rambam writes on this Mishnah, Hakavono bozeh ha-maimer, the intent of Hillel HaZaken is as follows. Shepu'ulos ha-ra'os yoshuvu b'rosh oseyen. Evil actions boomerang back against the people who perform them. V'amru chachamim b'midosh ha-demodig ba-modig din lo. Right? Whatever you do to others comes back to you. And adds the Rambam to this. V'zeh dovar ha-nira la'ayin. And this fact, that when people who are evil do evil, it comes back to haunt them, is something that we all see with our eyes. B'chol eis, u'v'chol zman, u'v'chol makom. At every time, in every season, and in every place. Shekol mi sheyaseh ra, v'yachadesh minei hachamos, Shehu atzmo yuzak min haroz ha'hem ba'atzmam asher chidesh. If a person institutes evil things into the world, we see with our own eyes that it always comes back to bite him, and he's always harmed by those very evils which he brought into the world. V'chein kol ha'malamid ma'ila, shemechadish po'al tov min ha'tovo. So too anyone who introduces something beneficial into the world, something good into the world. Yagieu to'elas ha'po'alahu. He will always stand to benefit from that good thing which he brought into the world. Mipneishu melami dovish yasda tov lo lezulosa. Because he's bringing in something which will do good for him and for others. Anyone who does bad, the evil that he brings into the world will go back against him. Anyone who introduces something good into the world, says the Rambam, you know, that good thing will come back to be beneficial for him and to the people around him as well. What's so striking about the Rambam is how sure he is about this principle. Again, Zed Davar Hanira La'ayin. This is something we see with our own eyes. B'chol eis, b'chol zman, b'chol makom. Every time, every place, it doesn't make a difference. We always see this to be true. So, especially when you line up these words of the Rambam with the words of the Tosfos Yontov, you got to wonder, did they live on the same planet? You know, the Tosfos Yontov is saying, we see Rishoyim who are doing well and Tzadikim suffering. And the Rambam is saying, no, what are you talking about? Life is wonderful. You know, all the Tzadikim get what they want. You know, all the Tzadikim get rewarded, all the Rishoyim get punished. You know, life is good, life is gewaldig. If you factor in, by the way, that the Rambam is a child was forced to flee from Spain because there was a fanatic Muslim group, the Almohads, that was sweeping across Spain and forcibly, you know, converting people to Islam. So the Rambam's family fled from Spain to North Africa, which is how the Rambam eventually ended up in Egypt at a later point in his life. You know, it makes the statement of the Rambam that much more poignant. You know, the Rambam's saying, yeah, life is always great. The tzaddikim get theirs. The rishayim get theirs. B'mchilas hakavod, with all due respect, you know, Rabbi Rambam, you know, you yourself were the victim of violence at a young age. You fled your home country in order to avoid being put to death by these Muslim fanatics. What do you mean? You of all people should know that it doesn't always work out, you know, so wonderfully in life. So I think, again, the way to understand the Rambam is really through the prism of how we're explaining the Tosfos Yontov. The Rambam is saying a lot of this is perspective. If you have the perspective that life is good and life is just, you will see the justice in the world. You will see how the tzaddikim are rewarded. You will see how the rishayim are paid back for their deeds. You know, you'll see midah keneged midah if your eyes are open to it. You won't always see it. Okay, so there are exceptions, you know? The things you won't be able to fit into the jigsaw puzzle. But the question is, are you looking at the world as being chaotic, or are you looking at the world as fundamentally having the structure? And then, okay, we have some kashas. Not everything fits into the structure that we'd like to be able to see. But that's a far cry from saying that there's no structure whatsoever. You know, the Rambam's very, very strong words on this concept, you know, really, I think, are best understood in light of the position of the Tosfos Yom Tov. Okay, so I mean, I think the takeaway is something that the Tosfos Yom Tov explains as well. The Tosfos Yom Tov speaks about the fact that these words of Hillel are in Aramaic as opposed to Hebrew. Right? That's why for us they're a little bit harder to understand. Al da teft atfuch b'sof metafayich yitufun. Right? So, granted, there's only one verb you have to know in order to understand that sentence, you know, but still, you know, for those of us who, for whom Aramaic is not our first language, most of us do a little bit better with the Hebrew than with the Aramaic. Why do you say in Aramaic all of a sudden? So the Tosfos Yom Tov reminds us that in the time of Hillel HaZaken, the spoken language was actually Aramaic in Eretz Yisrael. You know, the Hebrew was reserved for, you know, things like the Mishnayos, you know, things that were a little bit more formal. But, you know, much like Yiddish became the spoken language at a later point in Jewish history, Aramaic was the spoken language among people at that time in Jewish history. And by making the statement in Aramaic, Hillel wanted to make sure that even the least learned person in Klal Yisrael, who had no knowledge of Lashon HaKodesh, who had no knowledge of Hebrew whatsoever, would be able to appreciate and assimilate this idea that there's a God in the world and that He runs the world in a just fashion. And I think really that's the takeaway for us as well. You know, when we see things in the world that don't make sense to us, right, as opposed to saying we just don't understand the world in general, I am throwing up our hands, or worse yet, saying that there is no justice in the world, the world's not fair, you know, which again is an understandable reaction to certain things. What we have to remind ourselves is, Ma'aminim, is no, the world is fair. And most of the time, if we look for the fairness in the world, we will see the fairness in the world. We will be able to see the Midah Keneged Midah. Once in a while, we won't be able to fit things into that paradigm. But, you know, that perspective of the rule is that things work out in a way that's Midah Keneged Midah. And then the rest of the things we don't understand, okay, we don't understand. Those are the exceptions. It's just an important hashkafa for us to inculcate within ourselves to be able to look at the world properly.
But, you know, it's hard to get the full picture. Hashem has the full picture. I mean,
right.
Shouldn't we just know, like, if we don't understand something, it's still just because Hashem knows why He's doing it. I don't know, because I have a pea brain, but He knows.
Right. Well, so that is 100% true. In other words...
You know, like the time, let's say, when I remember reading something like a bunch of Jews during the Holocaust went on a boat, and they lost all their belongings and everything. And like 40 years later, they found them on, you know, underneath the ocean. And the Rabbanim said, well, if they had had all that information with them, the people running the boat would have killed them.
Right. Right. So 100%. I mean, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always running the world and always doing things in a way which is just. I think the point of the Tosfos Yom Tov is to say that we should train ourselves to think that most of the time we can recognize that justice. In other words, the Midah Keneged Midah is something that if we open up our eyes, we'll see most of the time in the world. We won't always see it. So then again, as you correctly say, then we always have the Emunah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is running the world in the best possible way as well. But, you know, we don't even have to say that we don't understand anything and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, the world to us looks like it's chaotic and doesn't make any sense whatsoever. We just have emunah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is running the world properly. No, we can look at the world and see much of the order and the fairness in the ways in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world. As the Rambam puts it, we see this with our own eyes, how when people do evil, it comes back to bite them. When people do good, it comes back to help them. We don't always see it, but we often see it. And if we're attuned to seeing it most of the time, you know, much of the time, that itself is a tremendous chizuk for our emunos. We look at it, the world. Yeah, you have to look for it. Right, right. In other words, a lot of it depends on your perspective. If you're looking for something, you'll see it. You know, if you dismiss it out of hand and you say, well, of course, you know, there's no Midah Keneged Midah, you know, I'm not even going to bother looking for it, you'll overlook it when it's even obvious. Right? The Rambam was the Rambam. So the Rambam looked out in the world and he said, yeah, the world is a very fair place. You know, things seem to work out in a way that's really, really good for tzaddikim and very bad for rishonim. Really? Yeah, because for the Rambam, he looked out for the world, and that's how he saw the world. So much of it is the perspective that a person develops within themselves as to how they view the world around them. I think that's, you know, ultimately the point that the Tosfos Yom Tov is bringing out. Okay, we'll wish everybody a good Sunday, and we will see everybody next week.